Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Afghanistan. I welcome Bill Raggio, senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He and his colleagues keep the Long War Journal. More than a year after the U.S. withdrawal, there's a great deal to say about Afghanistan and its neighborhood. And Bill begins by a conversation on CBS News with Michael Morell. It's a podcast. You're all welcome to listen to it. I begin with the points that Mr. Morell, former acting director and I'm a deputy director of the CIA, makes with Bill. One, ISIS is an immediate threat. Two, Al-Qaeda is a long-term threat. And three, what we have right now in Afghanistan is a quandary. However, no monies have passed into the Afghan government yet. And what does that mean for the future? Bill identifies what might have been, which is an Afghan national front established somewhere to the north of the country to resist the overwhelming assumption of the piracy of the Taliban. Bill, a very good evening to you. I begin with ISIS is the immediate threat and Al-Qaeda is the long-term threat, as you discussed with Mike Morell. What is right now your opinion of ISIS in Afghanistan in comparison to Al-Qaeda's strength with the Taliban? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yes, and what I was referring to there, I was referring more ISIS threat global versus Al-Qaeda threat global with the immediate. In Afghanistan, ISIS threat is to the U.S. is minimal. I view it as a tertiary threat. The real threat in Afghanistan is the Taliban-Al-Qaeda nexus. That alliance that's given Al-Qaeda both state sponsorship, the Taliban controls the state of Afghanistan, as well as it has safe haven there. So that's the real threat to us in the West. It aids the Al-Qaeda caliphate building project, as well as allows it to plot and regroup, plan, execute attacks against the West if it chooses. In Afghanistan, the Islamic State, why do I say it's a tertiary threat? It only has several thousand fighters. It's fighting for its survival. It's only able to launch, the only attack that's able to launch are local attacks against the Taliban. It doesn't control any territory. It doesn't have state sponsorship. It doesn't play well with others. The Islamic State, I'll summarize it really quickly. It's caliphate now. It doesn't play well with others. So if you're not swearing allegiance to the Islamic State caliph or its emir, then the Islamic State's going to go to war with you. Al-Qaeda plays a more clever game. It's a sort of a big tent jihadist movement. You don't have to be 100% on board with Al-Qaeda's project. If you're in the 80-90 percentile, you can work with them. So that's what makes Al-Qaeda more of a threat. In Afghanistan, the Islamic State's, it's battling the Taliban because of that conflict, right? Because the Taliban, because Al-Qaeda and other groups won't swear allegiance, won't be part of the Islamic State's caliphate building project. It doesn't have state sponsorship like the Taliban does from Pakistan or to a lesser degree Iran. That's what makes, the Taliban-Al-Qaeda nexus far more dangerous than the Islamic State.
And in a New Yorker piece by Steve Cole, the distinguished biographer and observer of Pakistan these many years, he notes that the Taliban denies it had knowledge of Zawahiri in residence in Embassy Row in a building associated with the Haqqanis. Deny. Is that consistent with your information? The Taliban is telling us, forget what we see. It's not true.
Yeah, exactly. Zabihullah Mujahid is the Taliban spokesman. Late last week, he said, we found no evidence that Zawahiri is there. We're still investigating. They're going to attempt to memory hole Zawahiri's death in Kabul as much as possible. The Taliban are not going to come out and say, oh, yeah, by the way, we did find evidence Zawahiri was there. they're not going to do that. The Taliban, you know, that they're not seeking international legitimacy like a lot of people are claiming. What they're seeking is getting what extracting what they can from the international community. The most important thing for the Taliban is to dominate Afghanistan, to dominate the security situation there and impose its harsh brand of Sharia or Islamic law. It doesn't care about legitimacy, but it doesn't want something like that. Admitting that Zawahiri was in Kabul is problematic for the Taliban. It makes it more difficult for the U.S. to release $3.5 billion in funds to the Afghan National Bank and for international aid groups to start working with the Taliban.
One of the most compelling aspects of your interview with Mike Morrell was your imagining or what-ifing the U.S. might have done rather than complete withdrawal with the U.S. forces, Bagram abandoned, then NATO forces. And what you imagine is an Afghan national front established somewhere in the country. I believe you said the north. What would that look like, Bill? What would it achieve?
Yeah, the Biden administration gave us a false choice when it announced withdrawal. But President Biden said that we only had two options. We could either ramp up the number of forces there to battle the Taliban, or we could leave, right? And that was the choice we were given. But there was a third way. That would have required a slow withdrawal from the U.S., letting the Afghans know that we actually were leaving. Again, they never really truly believed that the U.S. was leaving. Up until the last second, they thought the U.S. was going to bail them out. The quick withdrawal never gave the Afghan government and the Afghan military a chance to consolidate. Here's what they would have needed to do. Abandon areas of the south and the east to the Taliban. These areas were essentially lost. The Afghan government was only holding the main cities, the provincial capitals, and a couple of key districts. Most of the areas in the south and east were contested. They needed to shorten their lines, reorganize their military, take back control of areas in the north. The U.S., if it would have executed a slow withdrawal, it could have allowed the Afghans to plan for things like establishing air bases. The U.S. could have continued support, could have transitioned support to outside contractors. It would have given the Afghan government, the Afghan military, a fighting chance. Think of it as Northern Alliance 2.0. They could have attempted to secure Kabul and the approaches to it and regain control of areas lost. In the north, the Taliban took control of these remote areas in Badakhshan and Takhar and Baghlan and other districts with minimal forces. The Afghan military was so focused on fighting in the south and the east that it just lost control of the north, the key areas that were Northern Alliance strongholds prior to 9/11. So that's what needed to be done. The Biden administration just really wanted to take its ball and go home. It just threw its hands up in the air and said, we're out of Afghanistan. They didn't believe, the Biden administration didn't believe the collapse would occur that quickly. And I predicted that the Afghan government would have been lucky to make it out by the end of the summer. It wound up that I was about 6 weeks short or maybe 5 weeks short on that prediction. They didn't make it till August 15th.
What of the National Resistance Front? I think that's what it's called, especially in the Panjshir Valley. And in some conversation with Tajikistan, would that have been an aspect of establishing a front against the Taliban?
Absolutely. The National Resistance Front, which is made up of the Panjshiri militias and elements of the – it's currently as it's composed – of the Afghan military. It's led by Ahmad Massoud, the son of Ahmad Shah Massoud, who was killed by al-Qaeda 2 days prior to 9/11 in a suicide attack. He and Amrullah Saleh is the key of the last vice president of Afghanistan, and he holds himself up now as the president of Afghanistan. They've organized the remnants of the military and the Panjshiri militias and other militias in places like Andarab and Baghlan. That would have been a key component to this. But if the Afghan government could have consolidated, yes, they would have needed to bring back in the former so-called warlords and whatnot, organize them to support their local resistance, their militias, try to integrate them into an Afghan military. The Afghan government, under pressure from the U.S., alienated those key militia players that were needed. And this was a big reason why the Afghan government collapsed so quickly. Once the military and the government were on their back feet, the militias led by, you know, by the former warlords, there was no organization there. They weren't prepared for this as well. It's all shocking to me that no one was prepared for this. It was quite obvious to me and to you, John, and others, what was happening there. So, yeah, the National Resistance Front today, that I think is the key to resistance to the Taliban.
What do we know of the National Resistance Front, which has its legacy reaching back to resistance of the original al-Qaeda operators back to bin Laden time? What do we know about that relationship with Ashraf Ghani, the elected president of Afghanistan, who is saying now in recent interviews that he left Afghanistan empty-handed and he fled because there was no one supporting him? Is there a conversation between the NRF and Ghani?
Yeah, the National Resistance Front has no love for Ghani or any other key member other than Saleh and some select others. They have no love for the former Afghan government and individuals like Ashraf Ghani, who were weak in the face of growing Taliban military operations and political operations to take over the country. Ghani is a non-player in the resistance to the Taliban. He won't be welcome. If there is a Northern Alliance 2.0 being able to form, I'd be very, very surprised that people like Ghani would be welcomed back in, because given their role in the collapse of the Afghan government, he has no real power base behind him, too. Right. The U.S. really foisted him on Afghanistan.
Bill Raggio is senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, commenting on Afghanistan more than a year later after the U.S. withdrawal. What might have been, what could still be. One of the points made by Senator Joni Ernst in a recent essay about Afghanistan a year later is that the U.S. needs to pay attention to the neighborhood. When we come back, we will pay attention to the neighborhood, especially Pakistan. I'm John Bashley.